welcome to That Gabby Roslin Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. In this episode, I laughed so much that my eyes and nose were streaming. Honestly, I could not stop laughing. Just like Rob Brydon said, this man is the quickest. He is the funniest. He is, of course, Lee Mack. We chat about the success of not going out and Would I Lie to You, which he's done now for so many years that he actually can't remember what are the truths and what are the lies. We talk about how he wanted to be a golfer, having never actually played golf, working in a stable and getting to ride Red Rum, living with the mighty Boosh, Noel Fielding and Julian Barrett, working with Catherine Tate and the hysterical time he appeared on the TV show Pointless. Plus, there is, let's put it this way, a story about him pooing himself, which will make you howl with laughter. I hope you enjoy it. I am so grateful that this episode is sponsored by one of my favourite companies, Simprove. Now, it's a food supplement containing live and active bacteria, which has done absolute wonders for both mine and my family's health. More information can be found at simprove.com with the discount code GABY15 for 15% off the 12-week programme. I'll tell you more about it later. My favourite man, you make me laugh like nobody ever has or probably will do again.
Well, that's very kind of you to say.
I have to say, we have to start right away with Rob Brydon. He said that you are the quickest, funniest man ever. And he said, please don't tell him that because he'll go on and on at me about it. And that your wife, Tara, laughs at all of your jokes every single time when he's round. And he said, that's fantastic.
Rob has commented on that before and he's 90% positive, but there's a 10% about it, which makes me think he's saying it, that I somehow have an electric shock system rigged up to her that if she doesn't laugh, she ends up being tied to a radiator and punished. But she genuinely is laughing. But she's very laughy anyway. She's a very laughy person. She laughs at everything. So my ego would like to pretend it's me, but she laughs, you know. We were in a play once that was a very sad moment. And at the big sad moment at the end, she burst out laughing when everyone else was crying because she thought it was ridiculous.
I'm a bit like that. I'm like that. I laugh at the worst situations when you're absolutely not supposed to. Do you always, I mean, because you are... one of my favourite things I've ever done in my 33 years was go on, Would I Lie to You? I don't think I've ever laughed as hard.
Oh, that was great when you came on. What I love doing is watching back old episodes, because I can't remember, you see. So you'll say a truth or a lie that I have no... I mean, we've been doing it so long now, sometimes I'll watch myself read out a lie or a truth, and I can't remember if it's truth or a lie. That's how bad my memory is. I can't even remember if I did something in real life. But yeah, what did you, can you remember what you did, what you said?
Oh, yes, it was about manholes.
Oh, yeah, didn't your mum fall down one?
No, it wasn't. A friend of mine fell down a manhole, and Jack D kept going on about, let's just call it Gabby's manhole. And then...
Oh my gosh, I remember that. And we were all wondering whether that would make the edit.
It did, sadly. I don't think I have ever laughed as much in my life. How do you do what you do? And I know that sounds a completely deep and ridiculous question. But so you started stand-up and you would do bingo halls and all the things that you did before. Were you always looking for the joke? Were you always that fast? And I know probably you can't answer that. So I'm asking you anyway.
Well, it is a difficult question to answer. But I suppose I was... I can't remember... much else than wanting to be a comedian. I just vaguely remember at 13 wanting to be a golfer and going to see the careers advisor and saying, I wanted to be a golfer. And she said, what's your handicap? And I said, oh, I don't know. I'm not a member of a club. And she said, well, at your age, 13, you probably have to be playing regularly to be a... I just thought I'd seen it on the telly and it looked like fun. You know, I don't think I'd even played at that point. And because I'm a bit sort of, you know, obnoxious, I went back the following year. And she remembered me and she went, so how's the golf going? I said, I've changed my mind. I don't want to be a golfer now. She says, what do you want to be? I said, I want to be a caddy, professional caddy. Because I thought that was still sort of proving my point. You know what I mean? That I could make it in golf. I didn't want to be a caddy. I just didn't want to be in right. And I also wanted to be an astronaut at one point because I was looking at the moon a lot through a telescope. My mum and my dad were always like, you know, joking around. And there's not a photograph of my mum where she hasn't got the cigarette up her nose or her false teeth are deliberately falling out for the photograph. It's just the sort of way we sort of communicated. So I don't really know any different. And, you know, I sometimes get frustrated because if we're driving around or something with mates or whatever, or out in a park or something, and I'm just having a laugh, they go, "Oh, you're always on, aren't you?" And I always go, "Well, I'm not. I don't." This is how I talk. This isn't like me going, "I must perform." You know, it's the way I speak. So I don't know. I don't know any different.
So when you went on and did, because of all the things that, all the jobs that you've done, which I was reading about, you were a stable boy and you were a bingo caller and all of these things, and you lived above a pub. To me, these are all, it's as if you'd written your own sitcom while it was happening.
Do you know what? I know what you mean. You know that thing when everyone goes, the childhood you have is always, you think everyone else is having the same childhood. Well, that's true of pretty much everything I did before I was a comedian. I just was in endless weird jobs, but I just assumed everyone else was. Now looking back, that was quite odd, wasn't it? Like the first job was working at the stables because Red Rum was trained in my hometown.
Yeah, and you rode Red Rum.
Yeah, well, not only did I ride him, it was the first horse I rode.
Oh, my God.
So, again, that sounds quite sitcom-y now. But actually, at the time, I was just watching the telly, didn't know what to do with my life. I thought, I know, I'll be a jockey. But the decision sort of to be a jockey and then ringing up and asking for the job was about 60 seconds. I didn't...
You're kidding
me. I never thought of it. Yeah, I just sort of watched it and went, I bet that'd be a laugh. I'm going to be a jockey. And then rang them up and said, I'd like to become a jockey. And they said, well, you know, you can come down and muck out the horses, but you're not getting paid. You can do a bit of experience with us. So I did. I just did a month or two of just mucking out stables. And whilst I was there, they said, come on, then you can have a ride on a horse. And I sat on a horse and it was Red Rum. Now, I didn't think anything of it at the time. And it's only years later when I do interviews that it feels quite, everyone brings it up like it's unusual. And I go, yeah, I suppose it is, isn't it? I hadn't really thought of it that way, but I suppose it is.
Yeah, but when you were living in it, of course it wasn't unusual, but it's fodder. Excuse me, that wasn't meant as a pun, but it's created this. I mean, I know that not going out is meant to be based on your real life, and I've heard you talk about that so many times, but yet your real life, there's you've got to do something with all of that. I mean, being a blue coat and being the stable boy and living above a pub, it's all... That's all there for the taking.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Well, I have thought about it. I've often thought it would be nice to sort of try and turn that into a sort of drama stroke comedy and have someone playing me as a kid. But it's weird because it's only when you look back. So at the time, it doesn't feel sort of fertile for material or a show because that's not what you're thinking at the time, are you?
You're no, just going, but now you. But looking back, now you're looking back. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess you could play my mum.
Can I?
Yeah, can you do a northern accent?
Yes.
Have you got false teeth?
No, but I can get some.
Would you have them removed? Would you have your teeth removed? How much do you want this part?
Well, they can CGI it.
Yeah, it's not the same. I'm method.
Did your mum really have no real teeth?
She had her teeth removed because they looked a bit booked. Back in the day, she was only about 14 or 15 and she went, "My teeth are sticking out. Can I have all my teeth removed?" I'm bad false teeth because they're straight, honest to God.
You're kidding me.
That was the old days. I know someone who had her, who knows someone else, who had her little toe removed so that she can fit into high heels.
She had her toe removed?
How about that? Little toe removed to fit into high heels, not for any other reason than it was hurting her feet. And she managed to find a private doctor to remove a little toe. Now, I bet someone's going to listen to this and go, that can't be true. And it might turn out that I've been told about.
Oh, you see?
He said, covering himself legally.
But people must do that to you everywhere you go. Every story you ever say, whenever you go out anywhere, if you're in the pub, if you go to a party, if you're watching football, if you're playing darts, people must not believe you. Not because you're a liar, but because
of the show. Do you know what? In all honesty, that's not the issue. Do you know what the issue is?
What?
The endless, and I mean endless sentence, oh, so you do go out then because of not going out.
Oh, no.
And I have to, I've gone through different phases with that. The very first time I heard it, I was mildly amused and mildly pushing it.
That was 2006.
That was started. So probably the first day after it got transmitted. Here we are now, 14 years later. I'm not exaggerating by saying I've probably been told that 1,000 times and I still am managing just about to go, oh, yeah, Yes. But what I did go through a phase where I got so sick of it that I decided to pretend to not get it. So they go, oh, so you do go out then? I go, what do you mean? They go, well, you go out then. I go, well, of course I go out. Yeah. And they go, no, you know, not going out. I go, yeah, I am from not going out, yeah. They go, yeah, well, so you do go out. I go, well, yeah, I go out. I'm not just working all the time. And they'd look at me like I was an idiot.
That show does, I mean, that it's wonderful. I love it. I absolutely love it. And am I right? Your real son was in it at one stage, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. In fact, my real son has been in it, and all my nieces and nephews have been in it. But my son was in an episode that we did for a Christmas special about 4 or 5 years ago, where we needed a ghost, a child ghost. The story being that, you know, we think there's a ghost, turns out there isn't, but the twist at the end, there is. And my little son played him.
And he was, did you ask him, or did he say, Daddy, 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 please can I be in your show?
Oh, no. They're very apathetic about showbiz and my career. I think I asked him, and he went, what day is it on? Yeah, all right, I'll do it. Yeah, what's the pay like? You know, that kind of stuff.
Straight to that.
And I think, and the thing is, I think he did get a payment. I think it was £100 or £125. And it, for some legal reason, it was written to me, I think. And I never paid him. I'd completely forgot to pay him. And then I only mentioned it about a year ago. And he keeps telling me I owe him £125. And I said, I will knock £125 off the rent, which you've never paid.
Yeah, it's awful. How dare he not pay?
He's not counting all the times, is he? When he goes, oh, my money boxes, I can't get to it, I'm out. Can you just give me £3 for buying it? Yeah, that's added up to £125, isn't it?
Oh, easily. Easily. A parent's purse, always. Easily. But not going out is, because like, when it came off air, you didn't think it was going to come back, did you?
No. Well, we did three series and then it was taken off air. And the weird thing was, I genuinely, after the first one or the second one, would have not been surprised for it to be cancelled. It wasn't doing particularly great with the figures, and I would walk out in the street and no one would acknowledge it. It's like no one was watching it. And then in the third series, it suddenly, we were at the aquarium one day, and I didn't really get recognised hardly ever. And suddenly I was at the aquarium where there's loads of people, and it was endless. We only broadcast about two episodes, but you know, oh, so you do go out then. Oh, so you do go out then. Oh, so you do go out then. Very good, very good. And my son said, why do all these people recognise you? And I don't know why I said this, but I didn't want them, they didn't really acknowledge what I did for a living at that age. It was quite a few years ago, you know. So I made up a story that I was an expert on fish because we were at the aquarium, and that they all, no, sorry, I looked like someone who was an expert at fish. And they were coming up to me because they thought I was that person. Oh. Because I thought if I tell them I'm on a comedy show, it will alter their state of mind. It's insanity, isn't it? It's only when I say it out loud that I realise the insanity
of
that.
No, but actually it's very adorable. But now do they just keep asking you fish questions and you have to quickly Google them?
Oh, no, they've we're going back like 10 years ago, 10, 11 years. They've now sussed it out. I mean, they're teenage.
They've worked it out for themselves.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. If they still didn't know I was on the telly, my ego would be a bit battered. That's not a fish joke, by the way. They don't watch my stuff, but I at least want to know what I do for a living. That's the minimum.
Does it upset you? Because I have to say that my kids have always been the same. They don't watch or listen to anything I do. And I'm fine about it. And I want them just to be completely normal. But occasionally I go, oh, did you hear or did you see sounds? I go, no.
Do you know what? They don't. What they're obsessed with a sort of box set mentality. So like they sat down, well, the eldest one did, was allowed to watch Peep Show. He watched, I mean, it was a bit fruity for his age, but we let him watch them. But he watched them all back to back, one after the other. He did the same with The Mighty Boosh. He did the same with The Flight of the Conchords.
The Mighty Boosh. I want to talk about you and Noel Fielding, because both of you say that it was like being, because how long did you live together for?
Well, the thing, this gets brought up with both of us quite a lot. The real truth, it always says we shared a flat for three years. What we did was we shared a flat for 3 years at the Edinburgh Festival. So every year we'd go up, spend a month together at the Edinburgh Festival sharing a flat. So in total, we were only together for about 3 months.
3 months, okay.
But you know, I think people like to think of us living this fantastical sort of surreal Terry and June life where he was obviously June, I was Terry.
I mean, he says it was like Laurel and Hardy, not Terry and June.
But the reality is we were just at the Edinburgh Festival, and Julian as well. It was incredible to watch as well, because what I found fascinating was I was doing a show at the time with Catherine Tate, a sketch show. And I realised you don't live with people you're doing a show with because it can cause too much. You're together too much then. So she got her own place and I was on with the Boosh. But they did live together. They did not argue once. They got on all the time. There was no conflict whatsoever. I would say me and Catherine were arguing every 15 minutes. And I was jealous of the fact that they seemed to get on and me and Catherine were arguing. But I think it's because me and Catherine were so close as friends, it caused conflict, he said, protecting his friendship with Catherine.
Yes. Quickly jump in there, protect
quick,
it all.
Quick, just to say that she's still a very good friend.
Oh, that's so lovely. The other thing that I don't know why, but this completely floored me, okay, completely floored me, about you being in the West End and taking too many, you were the miser, you were in the miser and you ate too many non-sugar sweets. And that story makes me laugh. Please, will you, for people who haven't heard this story.
It is like the worst possible dream. It is 100% true. And it makes me cringe just thinking about it. Basically, I was trying to lose a bit of weight. I went on this sugar-free diet and I've got a really sweet tooth. So I went to Holland Barrett, I think, and they have these massive bags of, sweets, but they're all sugar-free. So I thought, well, that's perfect, right? And they had those, you know, those little things that are called eclairs, not the cake, the sort of little sweet, like toffee with a soft chocolatey bit in the middle.
Yeah,
I love them, right? So I had a couple, two or three, and I thought, oh, they're a bit Moorish, right? This was a family-sized bag. Anyway, to cut a long story short, I ate a lot, absolutely every one of them. Now, I'm on stage and I'm feeling a rumble, right? And in fact, I'm at the rehearsal bit. I think, well, you know, we had a little bit before the show, warm up and all that. And I'm getting the rumbles, right? And then an almighty explosion, right? I am going to the toilet every 60 seconds. It's awful, right?
Before going live on stage.
Oh, this is before I go live, but it's not stopping. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you know, the way a rabbit can seem to go every few minutes. It's like that. It's just constant. And I read the, and I think it must be something to do with these sweets. I read the back and it said, do not eat more than two because they have a laxative effect. I had eaten about 40 of these things, right?
Oh my God.
Now, in any normal situation, that's bad enough if you go in on stage and you're on and off all night. But in this show, one of the jokes was I had to turn round in the middle of a scene to show that they'd cut a hole at the back of my trousers to expose my bare bum. So, and I had to turn. And it's like, you know, you dream about going to school with no trousers on. And I'm like,
it's
oh my
nightmare.
God. It's like every nightmare. I know. And I said to the costume woman, I said, right, now listen, I have to be honest with you, because I'm usually the kind of person, I'm very repressed. I would never tell anyone about this, but what choice have I got? Right? I said, just so you know, I'll be disappearing a lot tonight. I won't be my usual, because there's an area next to the stage, you get changed. I said, I'll actually be going back to my dressing room a lot tonight. And I told her the story, and I said, and I'm terrified, because I'm doing a scene, and I can feel myself holding it in, and then running to the toilet at the end of the scene. When I'm not in the next one. I said, but what if it happens in that massive long scene where I get my backside out to the front row? And it's going to be awful. She's like, what if I poo myself? And she said to me, She was very matter of fact, right? She didn't care. She'd seen everything. She'd been in showbiz ages. She just went, Lee, don't worry about it. If it comes to it, I will put a tampon up there. and I said, no. If it comes to it, I will put a tampon up there. I want some dignity, right? And also, would that work? I mean, would it actually work that? It would come out like a missile, wouldn't it? Because it's not, you know, what they're usually used for is to sort of absorb rather than to stop. Do you know what I mean?
So it's not a plug.
You can't plug it in. It's not how it works at that end, does it? It's just going to and hit someone in the eye or something. It's going to be worse. And so I said, no, we're not doing that. And then so I just kept going back to the toilet constantly and you know, and also I'm not going to get too into intimate details, but what you're worried about as well is you think, oh, I'm holding it in, but you know, the explosions were so big, let's just say I was also concerned about my personal appearance, shall we say. And I, And there was no mirror. It's very hard to look at it if you're as inflexible as me. So, yeah, I mean, it was the most undignified, awful thing that has ever happened to me.
You just made me snort, love.
The happy ending is that I did, I didn't poo on the front row. There's no other way of saying it.
Now, as promised, I'd like to tell you more about our fantastic sponsor of this episode, Simproof. Now, I have been telling everyone about this company for years before we started working together. I promise that's absolutely true. It's a food supplement containing live and active bacteria to support gut health and a balanced microbiome. The reason that it's different from others that you might have tried is that it's unique. It's water-based, which means that it travels straight to your gut to thrive and multiply. Now, they're a family-run brand produced on a farm in the Surrey Hills. I've been there. They're all fabulous. And they're very proud of their heritage and evidence-based product. It's gluten-free, dairy-free, suitable for vegetarians and vegans. It's available as a subscription or start with the introductory 12-week program. Now, the gut has an incredibly strong connection to the brain. When you sort your gut out, your general health just feels so much better. For more information, visit the Simproof website, and that's simproof.com. It's SYMPROVE.com. We have an exclusive discount just for the listeners of this podcast. You can get 15% off the 12-week program by entering this promo code when you're at the checkout. It's GABY15. That's GABY15 for new customers in the UK. They have a fantastically helpful customer care team who I've called in the past, and they have been very helpful, and we'll put their phone number in this episode description.
Let's go to Celebrity Bake Off. Watching you on Celebrity Bake Off, you just look like you... You could tell me that I'm completely wrong. I won't believe you because I don't believe things you say because of the show. But you just look like you have the best fun in everything you do. And please tell me, you cook like that at home and then you just laugh it off.
My wife constantly, but I will make coffee, you know, in the plunger. And it is an absolute disaster. I mean, it's just...
don't be silly.
When I finish making plunger coffee, it looks very similar to the story we've just told about me being on stage. There's coffee on the windows. Because you know when you plunge it and it sort of explodes out the top? Do you ever do that? I think I'm putting too much coffee in. So I put too much coffee in. So when you plunge it, it's too solid. And so all the things squirts out. But like the milk, I can't multitask. So I'm trying to whisk up the milk in the whisker thing. And I like a chocolate sprinkle. I mean, that's not another joke about what we just said. I just can't multitask. That's the problem. So that cooking is the ultimate in multitasking, isn't it?
So is that why on Celebrity Bake Off it didn't quite go as well as it could have done?
Absolutely. I mean, I can't believe that I went on there with the attitude of, listen, I can't cook, so I'm not going to try. I'm not going to be competitive. I'm just going to have a laugh with it, right? So we start doing it. But they come over to you and do interviews whilst you're cooking, which I thought was brilliant for me because I'm not a very good cook, but I'm happy to have a laugh and chat away. But I found myself giving them the, I'm sorry, can you just leave me alone? I'm just trying to do this. You know, I'm trying to do this and you're talking to me. And it was, you know, I do that at Christmas. I cook once a year at Christmas.
You do Christmas lunch?
I do the whole, I don't just cook once a year, but it's fair to say that my wife does the majority of the cooking in our house. And she's going to listen to this and go, oh, majority, is it? But once a year I do everything for her family and they all come round and I take it very seriously. But they come round and start making small talk. And I'm like, oh, so how have you been, Lee? Like, can you not see that I'm cooking? I can't talk to you and cook, can I?
You really can't.
I can't, impossible. How do you do that? If I was talking to you now, if you heard a noise in the background and I went, what are you doing, Lee? Oh, I'm just cooking whilst we're chatting. You go, can you not? Wouldn't you? You'd think that you do one or the other. You wouldn't tolerate that, would you? So why should I tolerate it? I'm getting upset just thinking about it.
Can you really not? See, because, so no cookery show in the future for you. I know you do quiz shows, you do everything. No cookery show.
I wanted to do a gardening and cookery show that was based on reality. Because every cookery show that I see and every gardening show always has a happy ending. And it's not the reality. Like I've spent the last, I don't know, 4 months trying to grow potatoes and pumpkins and if I showed you the end harvest, you know, if it was, you remember you used to go around people's houses, I don't know if it still exists, for what's it called, the harvest festival, You used to give food to the elderly. Do you remember that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or was that just a northern thing?
But you haven't got anything.
If I did that, and if they saw what I produced, they would tell me to go away. They'd go, well, I'm not having that, even if it's free. There's like three potatoes, a couple of mouldy old tomatoes, one pumpkin. It's just a disaster.
That's a meal.
Yeah, but it's not what you what I wanted to do was create meals in the plural. Because I worked out the other day that we managed to get one pot of stew out of it, and I did the maths, and I reckon that pot of stew has cost about 300 quid.
What?
If you count all the... Well, I've had to buy certain types of soil to make a raised bed. I've had to do all sorts of things, and it's just... It's a lot of hours as well. You know, I tell you what, it's supposed to make you spiritually connected with nature, isn't it, gardening? But actually what I do, and I'm ashamed to admit it, I'm really impressed with supermarkets. What? Because I go round and I go, look at that beetroot. It's so perfect. Look at that carrot. It's so long, man, like the size of my little finger, and they're all bent and they're all...
Do you know what? I have to be honest. I don't get the gardening thing. And every year when I go off to Chelsea Flower Show and they want to interview me, and one garden expert said to me, oh, and have you got any problems in your garden? And I looked at them blankly and said, is it okay to use your lawnmower on your flower beds to weed it? I honestly thought he was going to kill me. He just gave me this look. And he went, what? I said, yeah, I do that. And then I get the loppers out and cut everything. And he honestly, it was like I had.
I know. I'm the sort of same. We got artificial lawn at our previous house. It was such a small lawn that we just wasn't getting any sun. So we gave up. The kids were playing football. I said, let's just get artificial lawn. And we couldn't work out whether to get the longer one or the shorter one. So in the end, I said to the guy, look, do the longer one. And then am I right in saying that if we're not happy with the long one, I can mow it with a proper lawnmower once and then it'll be the height I want it to be? And he said, you want to mow an artificial lawn? And I went, well, yeah, because it'll work, right? Mow it once. And then I thought, first of all, it wouldn't work because it's too thick, the plastic. It's not like grass. But more importantly, the neighbours would think I'm mad.
I think they know that already.
He's had artificial lawn. He's mowing it. What's wrong with him? You don't need to mow it, mate. It's not real.
Have you still got that, or have you got real lawn now?
We've got real lawn now. I did like the idea of mowing it artificially, seeing it, because it's a very enclosed house where like four or five houses would look over you. And I thought, if anyone says anything, I'll go and get my wife for a second opinion and pull out like a blow-up doll. So like nothing in my life is real. Just have a stud there. He reckons we shouldn't mow that. What do you think? Like a balloon dog.
Oh, my God. The other thing I wanted... I actually, you've made my nose run. You've made me... anyway, in the nicest possible way.
I'm glad we're 2 metres apart.
You've got... Is this true that you've got a Guinness World Record for darts?
I did have.
Darts?
Yes.
Oh, you haven't got any more?
Well, what happened was I bragged about it on Would I Lie to You as soon as I got this thing. And the professionals obviously watched it and thought, we're not having this. So they had a go and beat me. But the world record was for the most bullseyes in a minute.
How many did you have?
I got 12. Well, it's bulls and outer bulls, you know, the little green around the red.
My God.
So you have to throw three darts and then you have to retrieve them and then throw three again and retrieve them. So you're running backwards and forwards in 60 seconds, throwing really quickly.
How did you do that?
Well, I've been playing since I was about three. In the pub, when I grew up in a pub, I used to stand on a stool and throw the dart. So it's the one sport I'm actually all right at, as anyone who's watched Soccer Aid will attest.
No, you're good at football. I'm not good at football.
I mean,
yeah.
I'm not. No, I'm really not. Should I tell you how bad at football I am? I've done Soccer Aid for the last 3 years. I've missed a penalty every single year.
Yeah, I know.
And I'll tell you how unfit I am. They put this GPS thing on your body to measure your heart rate and the distance covered and all this kind of stuff. And put it up on the changing room wall for everyone to see, just to basically humiliate people like me. And there was about 50 people did it, and I was second to bottom in every category in terms of distance ran and heart rate, blah, 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 right? And speed and blah. And I, second to bottom, though. And the person who was bottom was Darius Fussell. Now, if you don't follow football, he was an England player in like 2004, 2006 sort of era. Still younger than me, and I beat him in all the categories. So I said to him, started bragging, going, I beat you in every category. And he's the only person I beat. And he said, sorry to disappoint you, Lee, but the day we did that, I wasn't here. We worked out that just the fact that his thing was in the bag and someone had carried it from the coach to the changing room and then back again, had covered more distance than I did in the training.
Oh, my God.
That's how bad I am. So thank you for saying, but I'm not good. Really not good.
You see, I know nothing about football. Gabby Logan's the football one. This Gabby, it knows. I know bugger all about football.
Right. Well, it's nice to hear the words. You're very good at football, aren't you, Lee? I know bugger all about football.
Yes. Can we just talk about the Queen?
Yes, please
do. Because apparently you love the Queen and everybody's talking about her Platinum Jubilee. So will you be hosting that again? Because you did the Jubilee concert.
I did the Jubilee one. Yeah, there was lots of us doing that, and that was absolutely. I mean, it will never be beaten in terms of feeling, what the hell am I doing here?
Really?
You know, everything about it. You know, the thing about stand-up is you sometimes do comedy to, like, I've done it to as little as three people. And that particular month, I'd been trying out new material at a local club to like 20, 30 people. And then suddenly you're at the Mall, looking down the Mall, and there are, I don't know, 50,000, 100,000. But then there's tens of millions, possibly 100 millions around the world watching this live show you're doing. And not just me. Obviously, I'm just introducing bits and bobs. I had written an autobiography at the same time, and it didn't have an ending. And throughout the book, I'd said that I'd met a lot of people, but the one person I'd never met was the Queen. And this was my now chance to meet the Queen, get a photograph, and use it at the end of the book. Couldn't believe my luck. And then I left someone in charge of taking a photograph of me meeting the Queen.
I've seen that photo.
And it's, I mean, it's...
nostrils.
It looks mainly like I'm stalking Kylie Minogue and Lenny Henry, yes, who are more prominent in the picture than me or the Queen.
What did the... Did you actually talk to her, though? Did you chat?
Yeah, I did actually. The idea is that you get introduced to the Queen, and Kylie was introducing everyone to the Queen. I think Gary Barlow was as well. They were walking along with them. It might be paranoia, but I am convinced that Kylie and Gary looked at me, thought, I don't know his name, and stepped back. So not have the embarrassment of going, and this is, who are you again? And they stepped back. So just the Queen came forward.
Oh,
no,
no, no, no way.
And I made polite conversation. I said, how's your husband? She went, yes, thank you for asking. And made a little chat. And then we both ran out of things to say. And she stood there and realised that at this point, people just lead her away. She never leaves a conversation. She's led away, or someone introduces someone else. But there's no one there. And we both just stood looking at each other going, whew, yeah.
No.
It was a real moment of, now what should we talk about? You know what I mean? What should we do now? I was glad to have met her, but as far as I'm concerned, she can move on. I've had my little shake of the hands. I've got nothing else to say to the Queen other than how's your husband.
She's tiny, isn't she? She's like... She's
tiny little woman.
She's like Kylie, the two of
yes,
them.
Yes, maybe
two
that's why Kylie
people.
Was asked to come round, to butcher up a bit, to make her look bigger.
Make her look taller.
Because we all know the Queen, before she goes out on any parade, always says, how can I look a bit butcher?
Where's
all
Kylie?
She's ever saying, isn't it?
Where's Kylie when I need her?
Get that Minogue, she can butch me up. In fact, get Gary Barlow, I bet he'll butch me up as well.
I would love that. Are there still people that you feel like that about? Because I love the way that you talk about the Queen. Are there still people that, you know, you can't, you really want to be with on Would I Lie to You? Or...
There's no one I can think. I mean, there's someone like Pele. I'd love to meet Pele. But I've got to be realistic. I'm probably not going to meet Pele. But the one person that I've never met, who I think I would love to meet, but he's one of my musical heroes, is Paul Heaton from The Beautiful South and The House Martins.
Have you never met him?
Never met him. And the amount of people I've said to, I'd love to meet him, who have said to me, well, I know him. come round with me. He's got a pub, because he owned a pub, I think, in Manchester. In fact, I had a very awkward situation with Paul Heaton where I get an email from my manager that says, see below. You know, you see the link below. Right. And it's Paul Heaton has emailed his manager, who's emailed my manager, who's forwarded it all on to me. Right. And it says, is there any chance you can get a signed DVD from Lee Mack for my wife? And I imagine what that does to me. He's like my musical hero. I'm like, oh my God.
Oh my God. Yes.
And it said on it, I'm trying to remember the exact wording, if he could write something like, I can't remember her name, let's say it's Julie, right? Could he write, I love you, Julie, but not as much as Paul? I love you, Julie, but not as much as Paul, right? Nice little light-hearted comment, right? So, what do you think that means?
What do you mean?
I love you, Julie, but not as much as Paul. What does that sentence mean?
It means you love Paul very much.
Yes! Thank you! You're the first person that's ever said that.
Why?
Everyone else interprets it as, I love you, Julie, but not as much as Paul loves you, Julie.
No, it means not as much as I love you, Paul.
Exactly, because I've done so many interviews where I've mentioned his name. I assume he must have read it. He must know I really like him. And it's a little running yes. joke where she likes me and he's gone, yeah, well, he likes me more. I love you, Julie, yes. but not as much as Paul.
Yeah, of course.
So I write this big signed DVD going, I love you, as requested, I love you, Julie, but not as much as Paul, because Paul brought out my favourite album, London Nil, Hall 4, by the Housemarque, and go on and on and on in a sort of waxing lyrical. And I thought, I'm really proud of that little light-hearted thing. And then I'm just about to post it, and my mate reads it and goes, oh, you misunderstood that completely. You're supposed to put I love you, but not as much as Paul loves you.
No, I'm on your side. Completely on your side. What makes... We ask everybody in this, what makes you laugh? Because I'm going to have to just say, before you answer that, that the amount of people that say you, and and without embarrassing you, because I can actually picture you getting embarrassed, because
I am embarrassed.
You're an incredibly kind person as well.
Oh,
but
thank you.
You properly make me laugh. Like, I can put you on television... And I, in the nicest possible way, I just have to look at you and I laugh because you make me laugh. So who makes you completely belly laugh?
Who makes me belly laugh? My earliest recollection of proper belly laughing was watching, do you remember a comedian called Phil Cool? He was an impressionist.
Oh my God, yes, years ago.
Many years ago, and he used to do impressions, but not normal impressions. He used to do an impression of a Morris Minor.
God!
Which I thought was incredible. You could impersonate a car. He used to make me belly laugh. And then all the alternative comedy in the early 80s, all that wave of comedy really made me want to be a comedian. Rick Mayall, the young one. And I'll tell you, used to really make me laugh is Bobby Ball in Cannonball. I feel guilty that I didn't watch as much as I would like to have watched before he died. And he just was a naturally funny bloke, you know. And a lovely bloke as well.
But when you worked together, did he make you laugh when you were filming?
I often describe Bobby as being someone who's like, he was 77, but he was like, there was parts of him that were like a 14-year-old kid. He just was not just his height, he was a little man, but he was also quite childlike in all the best ways. You know, he would just come in and everyone would just immediately be in a good mood. He just had this aura about him where if it was a Bobby week, if he was in the episode, everyone would be up. You know, and we go, oh, great. It'd be like having the kids on set. When the kids are on set in the show, it's very hard to be in a bad mood because kids just bring a natural energy, don't they, that makes you go upbeat a bit, you know. And that he was like that. He was just pure funny and he was such a lovely man, you know. And I'm still not quite, I still can't quite believe he's gone.
Well, it's heartbreaking. When people die and people who have made an impact on other people's lives, I really do hope that they can see the impression that they've left, that they've created happiness. Somebody like Bobby Ball, I don't know if you read some of the beautiful remarks about him, but it was that he left such a lovely feeling of happiness, and that's why people were so sad at, obviously desperately sad at his loss, but that he'd made people laugh. What a gift.
And and also that feeling that there are some, that Eric Morecambe's like this, that I think the best comedians, people feel that they personally know them, even though they've never met them. I've always had a real sort of, one of my all-time favourite, not just comedians, but people of all time, is Eric Morecambe. And I feel connected with him, even though I've never met him. I've met his son. I've met many people who've worked with him and knew him really well, but that you can just, more than a musician or an actor, you can feel that you know the really great comics, I think. I don't know why that is, but you just feel an empathy with them. And Bobby had that in bucket loads.
You have a lovely story about Bobby that you've told quite a bit about when you were on Pointless together. And it's so sweet.
My kids are obsessed with Pointless to the beyond belief, and they said, if you ever get a chance to go on Pointless, please will you go on it. So for the kids, more than anything, I decided to go on the show, and I needed a partner, and I asked for Bobby, not knowing anything about Bobby's general knowledge at that point. We went on the show, and if you haven't seen the show, the format is that you have four couples and you basically go along the line. So if I'm with Bobby, I'm number one and Bob's number two. And then it was Esther Ranson and Terry Wogan were three and four. Then McBusted were I think there's something about being losing to McBusted that wasn't even McFly or Busted. It's McBusted. Feels like even more insult that they beat us. I don't know why that is. They were five and six. And just to add insult to injury, seven and eight were also McBusted. The other two from McBusted. So we start with me, but Bobby's nervous and says, can I go first? The question was, name a word that ends in son, S-O-N. And he says, he doesn't bother thinking about it, doesn't bother giving it consideration, just says, Appleson. And I look at him and go, he didn't even give me a chance to cheat because, you know, I thought I'll whisper. If he doesn't, I'll just whisper it, even though you're not supposed to. And I didn't even get a chance to do that. And he just said, Appleson. And Alexander Armstrong said, what does that mean? And he goes, I don't know. It's the word, isn't it? Appleson. And so if it's the opposite of pointless, if it's not the correct answer, you get maximum points, don't you? So it goes all the way up the line, goes all the way back down the line. Bear in mind, I haven't spoken at this point. I haven't said hello. Back down the line. Finally, Lee, but it doesn't matter what you say because you're already out. Because all the others had scored well enough that I was out. My children were almost in tears. It'd taken 3 hours to get there. And I was out before I said hello on my children's favourite programme.
Oh, but I love that. Do you know...
Appleson.
I love that answer. That is completely my sense of humour. Just say what comes into your head and just go with it and laugh. Do you know, I know you're going to... Like I said a moment ago, you're going to be really embarrassed and I can imagine you blushing to this because you don't like it and you can't take compliments. But you just listed people that make you laugh and you are... one of those people that makes people laugh. And that's why people love you. And please just carry on doing what you do because what you do is vitally important. I think you are brilliant at what you do. I really do.
Oh, thanks, Gary. Well, that's lovely to hear. And you're right, I am slightly embarrassed whilst at the same time putting up a triumphant fist that you can't see. My blushing is a little bit like my other body movements we talked about earlier. You can actually hear my blushing.
I can hear you blush. Yeah. So
you can hear me blushing. Yeah, that's not blushing. That's the sound of me eating sweets with no sugar. Because there's one thing I can do, multitask, which is talk to you and sit at the table.
Oh, God, I hope you're not doing that. That would be the first and the last, hopefully.
I don't know why, but I tried to soften that by saying I'm sitting at the toilet rather than on the toilet. I remember once ages ago when, I've got to tell you this very quick, the reason why I think I said at the toilet was because I once had a dinner party. Someone came in and someone said, where's Tara gone? My wife, Tara, said, where's Tara gone? And I said, she's on the toilet. And they never let me forget it. They said, why couldn't you have said she's gone to the toilet? Why did you have to say she was on the toilet? And it always stuck with me that. I thought, yeah, it's a bit graphic, isn't it? It's a bit descriptive.
She's, well, that's
why people say
doing.
Bathroom.
That's what she's doing.
She's on the toilet. Should I carry on and tell you exactly what she's doing on the toilet before you serve dessert? And Lee, you had to end it like that, didn't you? You had to end it like that.
I'm so pleased you did. Lee Mack, thank you.
Thank you, Gabby. It's been lovely talking to you.
Thank you so much for listening. And thank you so much to our exclusive sponsor of this episode. Go to simprove.com and use the code Gabby15 at checkout. Coming up next week, the wonderful Nadia Hussein. That Gabby Roslin podcast is proudly produced by Cameo Productions. Music by Beth Macari. Please press the subscribe button and it will come straight to your phone on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you choose to listen. Also, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts.